start it that way. So welcome, everybody. This is Elaine, and it is Wednesday, December 14th of the year 2016, if anybody else is blown away by that as much as I am. Uh-huh. It is currently Wednesday afternoon, Atlanta Eastern Time. It's 3 p.m., 12 o'clock Pacific Time. And we are going to start our PSS call. And we have a couple people on the line, and we'll see who else manages to join us a few minutes late, which is, seems to be happening a lot at this time of year. So let's start with check-ins and see where everybody is, and then we'll go from there. So I've got Liz and Michelle on the phone. Liz, you want to give us a start?
Sure. So my son's name is Dylan, and he is 7, almost 8. Usually I have maybe more concerns than I do today, so I'm feeling pretty good today because I just met with his teacher. We had his first conference, and he's doing so much better this year in school. So I couldn't be more pleased. His medication is seeming to, you know, working. But he still struggles with impulse control. That's his major, you know, issue. And so I guess I'm going to want to try to continue to target the trying to get him to keep his hands to himself when he gets upset. His teacher said that would be the one area that, like, he's going to get in trouble for in the future if he doesn't try to control it.
Right.
Oh.
Well, and here's what I want to offer is, and we'll get into more, we'll have plenty of time to talk about it today, is to, you know, make that distinction between trying to control it and achieving it, right?
Right. Because I don't know how much he can control. Yeah.
Exactly. And so you want to know that he's trying to manage it, but we also want to, with him and with his teacher, make sure that you're setting reasonable expectations so that we're setting him up for success.
Right, okay.
Because a 7-8-year-old kid with impulsivity and ADHD is going to struggle with impulsivity in the classroom, period.
Yeah, right.
So you're celebrating a really good first report.
Yes. Kindergarten and first grade were kind of a nightmare. I got called constantly from the teacher and the principal, and he just really had a hard time with school, adjusting to school and really lacking confidence. And I think now he's finally feeling more confident with his skills, and he's learning to read. His fluency is much better. So I think with the confidence comes the better behavior.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you're working with him differently, and you know, you got a lot of pieces at play, so don't want to underestimate the value of what's happened since you've understood what you're trying to deal with work with him, right?
Right. Yes.
That shifts. Cool. All right. So, Michelle, I suspect you're at a very different place, going from, if I recall, you have like a 15-year-old. Is that right?
I do, yeah, 15-year-old.
Okay, so from 7
in high school, yeah.
Right. So what's up for you? First, start with a celebration. What do you feel good about?
Well, I feel good that my child, despite his ADHD, he has autism as well. He's managing to do pretty good in high school. He's getting good grades, and he's very conscientious. So if he has homework, he knows he has it, and he does it. So that's great. But I don't know if you want me to tell you the
That's
flip
great.
Side of that.
Stay there for a minute. So you're celebrating that he's sort of owning his...
I am.
He's conscientious and he's owning his stuff.
He is.
And he feels responsible for his work.
He does, and he's doing well with writing in his planner. He wants to do well. So he's not one of those
great
kids that lies and says he doesn't have homework, and he does. So I'm thankful for that.
That's
a
good
thing.
Where the autism becomes easier to manage than the ADD, right?
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Okay, so now you're allowed to move to where you want to take aim. So what are you struggling with?
Okay. we're struggling with, it's kind of tied into what I just told you. Because he's so conscientious, he gets very anxious if he doesn't finish something. And all of his teachers have said it's okay. Like, let's say he has 20 math problems. It's okay to do half. He'll still get credit. But let's say he has 3 classes that have homework that are due on Tuesday. He'd rather stay up till midnight and do it than risk getting a lower grade. And I've told him it's okay, it's okay. We finally get him to bed, and then in the morning he's tired and he's anxious, and there's a struggle and a battle, and I try to remain calm. I remember learning about that in the success system, or the other one that I took from
Sanity
School.
Right.
I try to remain calm in the whole thing, and it works a little bit, but he is very anxious, like, oh, my God, I didn't finish my homework, oh, my God, this and that. And it's okay, breathe, Matthew. I give him his cereal, his breakfast. And he gets anxious, and then he kind of freezes, and then he forgets that he's on a schedule. He needs to get that breakfast eaten so he can then get changed and get out the door in time. He's always flying out the door, seat of his pants, grabbing his backpack. His dad usually drives him in the morning, which, thank God, I can breathe when he leaves the door. You know what I mean? That's when I just take my side. Anyway, so, but I just, that's what we're struggling with the most is that morning craziness. And
okay.
I don't want him starting his day like that, you know?
So I want to ask you, so that's the context, right? So the general area of focus is mornings. Let's try to take aim a little bit more specifically and see if you can target one behavior that you'd like to see changed.
His anxiety.
One thing. Well, you can't change his anxiety. Sorry.
Okay. So tell me,
Because his anxiety is what he's living with, right? The question is, one behavior that if he shifted, you know, would lighten the load for the family? What's the change you want to see?
Well, I want to see him more conscientious of time management in the morning so he's not rushing out the door.
So those are two
rushing,
different things.
I guess. Would that be the behavior?
No, you're getting there. So bear with me because my job is to coach you through to help you find the place to take aim, okay? So it's okay that you don't get it right the first time. So the two things are, one is time management, which is still sort of a big concept, right? And then the next one is not rushing. Right? Which is still a little big, but way better than mornings, right? So
way better than what did you say?
Just taking aim on mornings.
Oh,
if you just take aim on mornings, you're not going to get very far, right?
Right, sure.
And if you just take aim on time management, that's still pretty big, right? If you take aim on rushing.
It is, I agree.
Can you get really... Do you have any sense in this? We could stop here and just take aim on not rushing in the morning. But let me just push a little bit since there's just a few of us on the phone. We have the time to coach it through a little bit, okay?
Okay.
Do you have a gut sense of what's really the source of the rushing?
Well, not wanting to be late, obviously.
No, but the rushing doesn't come from not wanting to be late. The rushing comes from not being ready to go on time, right?
Yeah,
so,
true.
Right.
I don't know. I wish we could
go to solution. How do you stop rushing? Usually it's to give yourself more time. But can you point to one area in the morning that's particularly slowing him down? Is it breakfast? Is it waking up? Is it getting out of bed?
Oh, it's breakfast, definitely. It's breakfast.
Be more specific.
He acts like he's at a restaurant and he has time to sit there and eat and take his sweet time. It should take him maybe 10, 15 minutes to eat breakfast, and he turns it into a 20-minute, sometimes almost 30-minute ordeal. And I have to keep telling him, look, you know, you've got 5 more minutes. Maybe I should be using a timer. I use that when he takes a bath. That seems to work. But it's really the breakfast is what's getting us.
Really,
he's rushing to get changed.
It's not rushing is one place to look. And it may be that it's eating breakfast in a more timely manner. But it may be that if you change the structure so that he may decide he wants half an hour to have breakfast, so it may be that it comes up in another way, right? I mean,
well,
with
I mean,
all of my kids,
clear,
if,
yeah,
as they came to teenage absolutely. Years, as we worked with them, part of what we discovered was that whole notion of rushing through in the morning was actually creating more stress than it was worth. And
oh,
they
yeah,
actually are the ones that decided to get up earlier, not me. Because
well,
they
you,
didn't
you
want me
something?
To be rushing them. What?
No, for sure. And you know what? He's actually open to getting up early. The only reason I don't get him up too much earlier is because he's up late doing his homework. And I feel guilty, like he needs to sleep. I don't want to get him up too much earlier just so he can have a leisurely breakfast. But maybe we have to compromise and get him to bed earlier at night. That could be part of what I tell him.
Sometimes
wanna,
mornings start at
you
night,
know.
For sure. Sometimes you find the solution to the morning starts at night. And so there's a piece of
yeah.
that for sure. But the other thing is that he's telling you he wants that leisurely breakfast, and there's a resistance. So it may be making sure he gets up with enough time.
Yeah, he also likes to watch cartoons, and I usually turn them off, or I might let him on, and then when I see it slowing him down, because he gets fixated on watching TV, and then he's not paying attention to eating, so then I turn off the TV, then it'll eat a little faster, but still not fast enough, so.
So,
let's
see where this goes. What I'm going to say is right now you're taking aim on not rushing in the mornings. Because we got some information to collect before you can figure out whether it's really about eating breakfast or about planning out the time or about the night before.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know what it is yet.
Yeah.
There are lots of options. But the place to start taking aim is to try to figure out how to stop rushing in the mornings. Agreed?
Yeah. Yes, although just to be honest with you, the rushing is mostly after breakfast when then your back's against the wall and you realize you only have 10 minutes to get ready, to brush your teeth, get out the door.
Yeah.
It's really that's what I mean by rushing. The breakfast, I have to push them to rush through breakfast, but you got it. Okay, good.
Yeah, I do. I got it. And
yeah.
that's where
right.
part of the using the model is going to be really collecting information because you've said a lot of things that are potentials that could shift things. Like if he's having breakfast and then brushing his teeth and getting dressed,
mm-hmm.
that may be the source. It may be a sequence issue. You know, you could solve a lot of problems. I don't want to solve it yet, but, you know, sometimes
sure.
if you brush your teeth and get dressed and then go to breakfast, then he only has as much time as he has allowed for breakfast, right? And so it shifts.
Yeah,
oftentimes, if you've gotten them out of their bedroom and then you have to go back into the bedroom, that can cause a lot more stress.
No, I hadn't thought about that. I guess I do that because he sometimes is a sloppy eater, and I don't want him making a mess on his shirt. But
yeah, choose your battles.
I don't know, but I also see your point. I like what you're saying. That's true. I think going back into the bedroom and then creating that rushing environment in the bedroom is probably not fun for him. So
right. So we're not going to answer it right this minute. We're just right now we're trying to figure out the change.
Okay.
The change you want to see is
sure.
you want to stop the rushing in the mornings.
Yes.
And we just don't know how yet, and that's going to come. All right?
Yeah. Okay. So. Okay. Fair enough.
Cool. Okay. Liz, where do you want to take aim?
Yes. I guess at kind of coaching my son through times when he gets frustrated and will be impulsive or like push his sister down or you know, I'm sure at school he's...
What's the change you want to see?
I want to see him keeping his hands to himself.
When, more specifically?
Well, mostly at school because I don't want him getting in trouble there. So
can you
how do I do that?
Specific?
How do I do that when I'm not there?
Well, when do you see him doing it at home?
When his sister takes one of his toys and starts playing with it, for instance.
Okay. Yep. So you can take aim on keeping his hands to himself or not responding physically when his little sister takes one of his toys. And
okay.
by addressing that, you're actually going to begin to teach him to manage that impulsivity, and then you can map that over into a classroom and talk to him about the classroom once he's seen some success with his sister. Does that make sense?
That makes sense, yep.
Okay, so I mean, the other way to do it would be to take aim on what's happening in the classroom and then maybe get a reward system in place and yada, yada. But given that it's December
right.
14th, I'm going to suggest
right.
that maybe you stick with what's in your space in the next few weeks.
I guess I just want to know what to say or do in that moment.
Okay. We're going to get there.
Okay.
We're going to get there. We got to start right. by getting clear on the change you want to see, right? By identifying the problem, not going to solution. And what both of you have said, and I just sort of want to highlight it for you, right, is this notion of, yeah, but I don't know how, right? Some variation of,
right.
yeah, but how? And so what I want to remind you is that the coaching conversation is about getting clear on what the changes you want to see and understanding the context of it first and looking through the different cornerstones, and the how will emerge from that. But if we start with the how, we often end up with a partial solution. But if we start by understanding it, lots of different hows become possible. Does that resonate for both of you?
Yeah.
It does. I understand that. Yep.
Okay, so that is the core distinction between the coach approach and most of the other parenting models out there, is they all start with, here, try this reward system, try this
mm-hmm.
structure, try this system. And what we're saying
yeah.
is, whoa, let's understand this individual dynamic and create a system or structure designed for it.
Mm-hmm. So it's like backwards design?
Well, actually, I would say that the rest of them are backwards design.
Oh, okay. Oh, all right.
Right, and that this is forward. Like,
yeah.
I think you need to start with the source and the design the program
okay.
for it instead of starting with a reward chart when you don't really even
right.
know what you're using it for.
Okay.
Right? But the
right.
only thing, but the research
yeah.
shows reward charts work, so they give teachers reward charts and say, use these.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't know what's the behavior you're trying to change in the first place, it's less effective.
Right, and I just don't know. There's such a fine line between what I think he can control, what actions
yeah.
he can control, and what he can't with his,
yes.
you know,
exactly.
what can he, like, how do I figure that out? It's so hard.
Well, that's what you're going to be working on this program. You will, 6 months
right.
from now, you will have so much more clarity on what is and is not a reasonable expectation. Okay?
Okay.
And you'll know how to ask yourself the questions to do that.
Okay.
All right, so let's get into today's topic, because it's a perfect topic for everything that's come up. Hello.
Yes.
Right?
Exactly.
Today we're talking about managing triggers. Have either of you had a chance to
yeah.
read the workbook yet?
I didn't. I apologize.
That's okay. I'll go over it with you. I didn't hear what Liz said. What?
No, I have not had a chance either.
Okay. No, that's totally fine.
Too.
Just a reminder that it's on page 33 in the workbook, and reminder that the workbook is a fillable workbook. So that when you have a chance to have it with you during the class, you can take notes, you can capture your thoughts at the journal at the end, that kind of thing. So. And you can do it online, or you can print it out. And some people like to have it as a notebook. Whatever works for you. There's no right or wrong here, okay? Just checking in to know where to start. Okay. So the topic here is managing triggers. And this is sort of yours, theirs, ours, everyone's, right? Because a lot of times what you guys are both talking about is kids who are struggling with some variation of anxiety, right? That
mm-hmm.
anxious response to not doing what they want me to do, and I want to be able to do what they want me to do, but I can't figure out how to get myself how to do it, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so they get triggered. So, Michelle, your son's getting triggered because he really wants to do well in school, and they give him 20 problems,
yeah.
and he's got that lovely black or white autism brain that says, if they give me 20 problems,
right.
I'm going to do 20 problems, right?
Right,
exactly. And so it may be that he needs the accommodation to only get 10 problems with 10 optional
yeah.
assigned to him, as an example,
yeah.
to manage
mm-hmm.
that piece, right?
Right.
But so he's got this anxiety from wanting to do it. And Liz, your son's got this anxiety because everybody keeps telling him to keep his hands to himself, and he doesn't even realize he's doing it. until he's getting in trouble for it, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So both of them are a little stressed out by what's expected of them, typically, right?
Yeah.
And so then when they get directed, redirected, channeled, whatever it is, then they get triggered, right? So the trigger is a very personal thing. We each get triggered. And then, Michelle, you were talking about it earlier. You stay calm, you stay calm, you stay calm until you don't anymore, right? Because then you get triggered because now you're late.
Exactly. It's like
right? And everybody's going to be late for school. So,
like,
right. Yeah. So having to rush him is actually a trigger for you.
It is. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Right. So he's triggered by you rushing him. You're triggered by having to, feeling like you have to rush him.
And my husband's getting tired of hearing us every morning.
Exactly, right. So everybody's got their triggers. And and the message here, the reason we're talking about it is because each of us has our triggers. And when we can pay attention and notice what our triggers are, we can begin to control how we respond to them, right? When we know someone's pushing our buttons, whether they're doing it on purpose or not, and as they get older, they will do it on purpose. Just telling you. But whether they're doing it or not, if they're pushing our buttons, that's our job to manage, not theirs.
Right.
Right? And so it's our job to figure out how to control, respond to what happens when we get triggered.
Right.
And so when we begin to identify what our triggers are and theirs, that's when we begin to start emotionally responding instead of reacting. And that's what you've been working on, and it takes time, it takes practice. I'm going to give you some strategy for it today. Because we do have a four-step process we teach that I think is immensely helpful. But even before I get to that, I just want to have a moment to just converse for a little bit about what's coming up for you just in this moment about, oh, wow, he has these triggers or I have these triggers. What are you noticing?
What am I noticing about the triggers?
Yeah.
Well, I think it's interesting, like what you said, that his triggers are then creating my triggers. And hadn't really thought about it that way because I'm very focused on what needs to happen in the morning to get him out the door. But it's adding undue stress to me as well, which then is probably making him more stressed, you know. So I think there's a lot more going on than I realize, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't look at it as objectively as you do, so.
Right. Well, and when everybody's in a triggered state, you get a hot mess.
There's just no other way around it. That's true.
Because what's happening? Well, Liz, go ahead and you respond, and then I'll explain the next piece.
I was going to say that I absolutely feel triggered when he puts his hands on his sister and she starts to cry. Then you know the hair on my neck stands up. Like, all right, you know somebody's crying, and Dylan will start whining and kind of breaking down, and then he'll say, "Oh, I'm such a bad kid." So he says, "I'm such a bad boy. I'm such a bad boy," because he feels, and I think that's his way of showing me, like, I can't control it, but I want, I want to, and I know I'm being judged for this.
Right. Right.
So
you got a little mama bear in there too that's protecting your other kid.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. I do.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't want him to hurt his sister. She's small. So.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, so they trigger, we trigger, everybody gets triggered, and then, as I say, hot mess. All right, so let me explain what's happening when you get triggered. It's actually a physiological process. And, Michelle, you were talking about your son, that when he wakes up and he's tired and you're rushing and you're late, that all of a sudden it's like he freezes, right?
Well, freezes when he's eating. I think he just doesn't want to deal with it, and that might be part of why he's taking his time eating breakfast would be my guess.
So
probably, I mean, I'm that way too. You know, you need your coffee sometimes before you get going to your day. It's probably
his
way of needing his coffee. It's just turning into a very long coffee break. So anyway.
I love that. Is breakfast a very long coffee break? Or decompressing in some way, right? So
yes, exactly.
Physical process of what's happening. Okay.
Okay.
Someone gets triggered. their body goes into fight or flight. And their brain is hijacked by the amygdala. Literally, the frontal lobe, the executive function of the brain that they're already struggling with, ceases to be in charge. And now the primitive brain takes over. Right? Does everybody remember whatever you can of high school biology?
Yeah.
This is the extent of my it's the extent of my high school biology, so occasionally I have to check in with Diane and say, I'm right here, right? But what's happening is, generally speaking, we have kids who have a compromised frontal lobe. Their frontal lobe is not as fully developed as their peers yet. And when they get triggered, the primitive brain completely takes over, and they no longer have what's left of their frontal lobe to manage. So they're no longer operating from a thinking, reasoning brain. They're operating from the animal with the tiger at the door. And when that happens, they're either going to freeze or they're going to fly or fight, right? I mean, I'll never forget, my son said to me, he said, can't you see that when you start rushing me in the morning, it just makes me slow down? Like, I guess you're right. It does. Because, so because he's actually doing that to try to stay out of being hijacked. He's trying to prevent himself from getting triggered in the first place, right?
Right.
Once you're triggered, the brain takes over, the amygdala takes over, and you start telling yourself a story, and you're not reasoning, and you're not rational. It's physical brain. It's primitive brain.
Right.
So the four-step process to escape the stress cycle, this is the trigger management process that we teach, and, you know, a lot of people teach it. It's common in the mindfulness realm and behavioral psychology. You'll see it in a lot of places. So the way we describe it is the four-step process. Step one is to recognize that you're triggered in the first place. This is the step that many of us skip. Right, so both of you just went, oh, wow, I didn't really realize that I'm getting triggered too, right? So step one is to become aware of when you're getting triggered. And there are a lot of ways you can do that, you know. Sometimes it's just noticing what's happening or your tone of voice changing. Or, you know, some people will keep a trigger journal, you know, for a few days and notice when what's happening before people get triggered. A lot of adults, you'll begin to notice that maybe your hands get sweaty, your heart starts to race, the hair stands up on the back of your neck. Isn't that what you said, right? Right. I mean, we actually do have physical tells that let us know we're starting to get triggered. So the first step is to recognize that you're getting triggered. Okay? Step two is to do what we call reclaim the brain from the amygdala hijack. This is the next essential step that most people try to skip. Reclaim the brain means once your brain's been hijacked, you've got to get it back to your frontal lobe in order to continue with a reasonable process. And there are a lot of ways you can do that. You can do that by taking deep breaths and slowing it down. You can do that by taking a shower, drinking some water, taking a walk, going up a hill, doing wall push-ups. Having a good cry, right? There are a lot of ways you can do it, but in order to keep the process moving effectively, you've got to reclaim your brain from the amygdala. When my kids are hijacked, we keep a chin-up bar in our kitchen pantry.
A chin-up bar?
So that when people get stressed out, they can just go do a couple of chin-ups, pull-ups.
That's a good idea.
It's really simple. It's a great when they're trying to get going on homework and their brain's not going. It's a great way to activate the brain too. So whatever it is, if you talk to any of Diane's private clients, they always are walking around with a water bottle with a sippy top. Because that's another way to reclaim the brain is drinking water. Sadly, tea and coffee does not work. I wish it did. But water is like the primitive brain recognizes it as the animals at a watering hole. It signals safety. And so if you drink water, that can help you reclaim the brain.
Interesting.
Deep breaths with longer exhales than inhales can help you reclaim the brain. The catch is to really reclaim it and not just take a couple of deep breaths and go, okay, now I'm okay, when you're really not.
Yeah.
You know, like false calm is still not calm.
Right.
Right.
Elaine, can I ask you a question about all this?
Yeah.
I wanted to know the trigger management points that you're going over. Sounds like you're telling us as mothers to do this, but what about, is there another steps for the kids, or should they also be, because I don't know if Matthew's going to sit there, my son, and say, well, I recognize my trigger, but, you know, I could definitely have him do some of these exercises.
Yes, you can teach him this, and over time you will teach him how to do this. Like, the first step is also... Sometimes it could be as simple as recognizing it for him. You know, I'm noticing that you're getting really upset right now.
Right.
Do you want to take a minute to calm down before we continue the conversation?
Okay, that's a good idea.
Right?
Yeah, I think sometimes.
And then at another time, you can actually have the conversation to teach these four steps to the kids. They can learn it, particularly the 15-year-old, particularly Matthew.
Yeah.
But even Dylan can. Liz, it just takes a little bit longer, and you have to use more kid-like language, right?
I do remind him to take deep breaths.
But you have to tell him why.
Right. I see that you're upset.
Yeah, it could be, it looks like you're getting really upset right now, or, wow, let's take a break, because I think everybody's getting upset right now. At a different time, you want to brainstorm with him, what can he do to calm himself down when he gets upset?
Okay.
I remember when my son was about 7 or 8, maybe 9, somewhere around then. 9 was the worst year of his life, in my opinion. I remember many times sitting on the floor of the kitchen, and he would be furious with me because I would not let us continue the conversation until he had really calmed down. And he would take a couple of breaths, and he'd say, okay, I'm calm. But he wasn't. And I would say, it's okay, we've got time, I'll wait. It's really fine. It's okay to wait. Let's just wait till we're both calm. And sometimes I would say, I'm not calm. We got to wait, right? Because he was too young to really process it. It would make him so angry that I would insist on waiting to continue the conversation. That if I continued the conversation when he was still triggered, it wasn't going to do anything.
Yeah.
It wasn't going to be helpful. So you really, really got to teach them the value of reclaiming their brain. And it may take a few years for the little ones to sink in. I will tell you, my 15-year-old can do it now in a way it surprises me. But at 9, he was a nightmare.
Wow.
So it just takes some time. You just want to keep reinforcing the message without shame or judgment that, you know, this is part of his job is to learn to manage it over time, right? So step 2 is to reclaim the brain. So step 1 is to recognize that you're triggered. Step 2 is to reclaim your brain from it, to really, truly calm down before you move forward, right? Step 3 is to create a new story that is also true for you. Make up a story that works for you. So part of what happens when we get triggered is we make up a story that's not helping us out, right? So when you're late and rushing in the morning, Michelle, what's the story that you're telling yourself in your head?
When I'm late and I'm rushing, I think I'm just, like, frustrated. I'm like, here we go again. There's got to be a better way to get through this morning. Really,
right, here we go again. What a mess. And you may be saying, this kid is never going to get it together in your head. Or you may be saying, I can't believe I haven't figured this out by now.
Yeah, that's
right?
Part of it, yeah, because I have had some training in the past. But I also think a lot of it, I don't know, like, you know, how our sons are different ages, what worked maybe at 10 or 9, we're now dealing with different things. So, I get mad at myself. I'm like, wait, crappy mom, I can't figure out how to get my son through his morning to get out the door.
Right. And how does that message set you up for success?
Oh, it doesn't. It doesn't at all.
Right. So when we say create a new story that's also true for you, what's another story that you could tell yourself that could be true? Maybe not 100%, but that you could certainly believe more likely.
Well, I guess I could just say, you know, it's a little bit rough right now, but we're going to figure out the steps we need to take so that it does go a little more smoothly.
Right.
And I know we'll get there. This isn't forever.
Right.
It's going to
It's rough right now, but we're going to get there. This is not forever. Right.
Yeah, that'd probably be a better conversation to have in my head.
Exactly. Right. So once you shift to that conversation in your head, then step four is to take action based on the new story. So once you shift, so when you were telling yourself, I'm such a failure as a mom, we're never going to get over this, I can't believe we're still dealing with this, what are the possible steps of action that you're likely to take?
Well, I'm having that thought in my head. Not much. I mean, it would just be I would try a different thing, but...
You're
going to
just keep trying to rush it through, right?
Yeah, I don't think much would change if I'm thinking like that. Probably not.
Right. So when you change the story to say, it's rough right now, but we're going to figure out a way to get through it, what's possible?
Right.
What potential actions can you see that are different?
Well, I think I'm going to go about problem solving in a calmer way.
So your calm can come from that new story.
Yeah, my calm that I try to have that ends up not being calm by the time he leaves for school. I got to figure out how to keep calm and just figure out the best plan for him. I know it's out there. You know, it's one of the
stay with me for a second, okay? So once you create this new story that is...
Mm-hmm.
This is hard right now, but we're going to figure out a way to manage this better.
Yeah.
What I heard you say is possible is you can stay calm, you can step into problem solving, you can come up with new solutions, right?
Yes.
So a whole different realm of possible action comes up for you because you changed your perspective, your mindset.
Yeah.
Do you see that?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I do see that, yeah.
And that's sort of a fundamental piece of coaching is that when you shift a perspective, you actually change the potential outcomes.
Yeah.
So remember when I started off the beginning of the call and I said, we start off by figuring out what we want, what the vision is, and then we figure out the how. Because the how is going to change once we understand what's going on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that? So this is the example of that. Once you make up this new story, you shift your perspective, more hows come available to you than there were before. Different hows than you would have had if you started with, I need to get this kid to school on time.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it's a slower process, but it's the impact of it, the long-term results of it is more powerful. Because these are changes that will stick.
You know, may I ask you something that's on topic, but it's just a tiny bit off in reference to what you're talking about. If most households, like, you know, fortunately I'm married to his dad and we're happy and all that, but, you know, I'm learning all of this, which is great. My husband's a very busy guy. He's kind of in the background. He's getting ready for his day. I'm wondering, because he gets upset when he sees the stress that we're going through. He just takes him in the morning, but should I be sharing this with him? Because I think he just thinks I need to figure it out, and now I'm thankfully talking with you and getting some great ideas, but maybe I need to share it with him and say this is a new way I'd like to approach this, just so he's kind of on board. You know what I mean?
So is that really a question?
Well, yes and no. I mean, it's probably obvious I have to tell him, but he's also a very black and white engineer type, so he might be like, oh, come on, just figure it out. I don't know if he's going
right.
to, I don't even know
what
I'm trying to say, because it's going to take time is what I'm trying to say, and he's a very solution-oriented black and white type of person. That's what I'm getting at. So.
Got it. Yeah. Well, and so I think what I would say to that is that it's going to take, as you figure it out, you'll share bits and pieces. And it's going to take time for you to really get comfortable with it so that you can help him get comfortable with it, right? So, you know, you can share, I don't really know what this is going to mean yet, but this is what I learned, and, you know, I'll let you know when I understand it more, or, you know, there's this 10 minutes when she was doing the lesson in the PSS class today that I'd really like you to listen to. Would you be willing to listen to that? Or, you know, do it in bite-sized pieces, right?
Okay, that's what I was asking. I know he needs to know, I just wasn't sure how to tell him. So,
you know, the workbook is really good for that. Because the work, because it's only one page a week, a class, right?
Yeah.
So it's really, really good for that. But I'll tell you a story. When I first started this whole coaching thing, my husband was definitely not on board with me. He thought he was, but he wasn't. And I mean, he was supporting me doing it, but he kept saying, "What do you mean, just take aim on one thing? We can't. She's got all these things she's got to do, right?" We were at a couple of years later, he actually became a coach. And a couple of years after that, I went to him and I said, "So I'm just curious, what changed? What happened that changed and got you on board?" And he looked at me and he said, "I just couldn't deny anymore that what you were doing was working."
Really?
That's cool.
Wow.
So it really started without him. And there were times where he was even an impediment to it, if I'm really honest. That was part of what I was dealing with, and I, you know, learned to manage that and to ask for what I needed. But over time, he began to see the impact it was having on the kids, and so he became more receptive. Can I tell you who sat down and read everything I gave him to read? Never.
Yeah, never. Mine won't either. I know him. Yeah.
But I could get him to listen to one thing or watch one thing or read one little thing. You know, I could get his attention for 5 or 10 minutes or on something. So when we do this class, when you go back and listen to the class, usually at about 25 or 30 minutes into it, you're going to hear me say, "Okay, let's talk about the topic for today." And it's never going to be more than 5 minutes.
Okay.
For me. Now, I don't know. Jeremy and Diane may teach longer than I do. I would rather get into a conversation about it. So I teach very little, and then I open it up for conversation. And if that teaching resonates for you, make a note, because that's an easy 5-10 minutes to pull for him to hear.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's great. Thank you.
Yeah. So you created a new story that works for you, and different action is available to you based on that story. What about you, Liz?
Well, I'm over here scribbling down all of your four steps because
they're in the workbook too, just so you know.
Okay, well, I'm in the car, so
I know, but just so you know, there is a place where they're written down for you.
Oh, great. I'll go back and check that. But my husband is much more easily set off, triggered by Dylan's behavior than I am. So I try to be the one that stays calm, and it doesn't always work, I would just like to make my husband aware of these steps also, because he just really needs, I mean, he needs probably more help than I do, like controlling his temper, you know, with when Dylan does something to trigger him. But as for me, I guess taking a few deep breaths myself and trying to calm myself down before I approach the situation, I think is definitely going to help. I never thought about drinking water, but I could try that too.
Okay. All right, so let me ask you a question. If the scenario for you is what happens when your son hauls off and hits his sister, right?
Uh-huh.
What's the story you're telling yourself now that's not working for you?
Like Dylan's aggressive again and he's hurting his sister and I don't want that to happen.
All right. So it may be he's hurting her. It may be he's never going to learn this.
Right. He's never going to be able to keep his hands to himself.
Right. He's going to, which awfulizes out to, you know, this kid's going to fail in his whole life because he can't keep his hands to himself.
I know. It makes me scared of like what happens to people that can't control that.
Right. Oh, my God. He may never learn to control himself.
Yeah.
I want you to hear what's really the thought behind, the feeling behind the thought, the fear behind the thought, okay?
Yeah.
Because it's not just, oh, he's hitting her again. the story you're telling yourself is this kid's going to fail out of life because he can't control himself.
Yeah, pretty much.
Right? Which is, but hear me, that's pretty normal. For
okay,
a parent of kids,
it is normal.
It's a normal thought to have.
Yeah,
what
sometimes
I'm
I don't
encouraging
think it's
you
normal.
To, oh, I hear you. That's why you're here.
Yeah.
Right? But
right.
What I want you to hear is it's a normal thought to have because it's scary. And and what I want to encourage you to do is say, okay, if that thought's not serving me or him. So what's another thought that could also be true that could be helpful here? What else could you think when he hits his sister?
I'm struggling with this part of this. Like he could learn from the experience, and I don't know.
Okay, Michelle, I've got something, but I want to hear Michelle whether you something comes up for you for her.
I think what she said kind of makes sense.
Okay, so one potential thought is, okay, he still has something to learn, or he can learn from this, right? Another thought might be, oh, he's having a hard time managing his impulses right now. I can help him with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right? Because we go to that punitive place of he's a bad kid, just like he's going to himself and making himself the bad kid, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if we start with that compassion, it's like, oh, he's struggling right now. He's having a hard time with this.
Yeah.
Then when you
idea.
Shift your mindset there, what's possible from you from there, for you from there?
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's a question.
That makes sense.
So if you shift and you say, oh, he's having a hard time right now, what action is possible for you from there? That's step four, is to take action based on the new story. What action could be possible?
I guess just to walk over and either take him by the hand or something and, or bend down and speak with him, have a conversation with him and say, I know that you're having I know you're upset that Haley took your toy, but I can help you work through it.
Yeah. So it gives you compassion. Right?
Mm-hmm.
It gives you that way. So you've heard us talk about ACE, acknowledgement, compassion, and then explore your options. So you can acknowledge what his experience is. You're having a hard time right now. Have compassion for it. I don't blame you. It's really no fun when someone takes something from you. I'm so sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then explore options for management. You are coming from a positive parenting place. You're coming from a supportive place. He's less likely to beat himself up because now he's not going to shame land.
Right.
So
putting him in timeout sounds like it's the opposite of what I should be doing.
Well, so if you know that he is struggling to manage something, that this is an impulsivity issue, and that he's not maliciously hurting her, but he's not able to control the response.
Yeah.
Then, and putting him in timeout is not changing the behaviors, I'm guessing. Is that right?
Right.
Okay. Then if you try the traditional parenting approach like that and it doesn't work, then there's an opportunity to try a different approach, right?
Okay.
To say, to reward him when he doesn't, to set up an acknowledgement of success for him when he doesn't react when she takes something from him. To set it up in advance. I know that sometimes she's a little kid, she's going to do that. It's so annoying. And, give him points or rewards or, marbles or whatever you use. Extra reading time with you. Whatever it is.
Yeah.
So that to catch him being good when he's not doing the negative behavior will be a positive reinforcement for him to try to change it.
Okay.
Hmm.
That's a good idea.
Right. And you want to set the expectation it's not okay to hit. And so when you go and you say, I know that was really upsetting and I'm sorry. And I know it's not okay to hit your sister. So how do you want to handle that? You know, and so that you're instead of saying, now go apologize, right?
Right. Yeah.
You want to give him the capacity to make it right.
Okay.
And to begin to shift it. And it may be that he's not ready to do that right away. You know, it may be you need to give him half an hour and come back and say, is there anything you want to say to your sister now?
Okay.
I mean, this is an issue over time. It's going to take time for a 7-year-old kid to learn to manage that.
Yeah, right.
Right? And so you want to do it from a place of compassion and understanding instead of, you know, punishing him for what he really doesn't have control over yet.
Yeah, because it makes me sad that he feels, I'm sure he feels shame at school when he gets in trouble for moving a child out of his place in line, you know, or putting his hands on someone. He hates, he's really a people pleaser, and I feel like, you know, he must feel horrible for when he's punished, and he doesn't necessarily have that control.
Right. So he needs, you know, a different management when it does happen. And he needs some strategies for himself for what he should do with his hands if you don't want him putting them on other people. Maybe he needs a fidget for when he gets in line at school.
Yeah.
Maybe he needs, he needs something to do instead of something not to do.
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
Right? So I want to be mindful of time. So let's sort of wrap up today. I want you to, the final four questions are, what were we focusing on today? What were you focusing on in this conversation? What's your aha or takeaway? What commitment do you have for action from here? And what do you need to do to set yourself up for success with that action? Right?
Well,
when I ask what were you focusing on, I know what I was talking about, but where was your focus, and most importantly, what's your takeaway from today? What's your aha?
Can I share mine?
Yeah,
my aha is, I think, shifting the story in my head is my biggest aha, and making it, you know what we talked about, how things are rough right now, but we're going to figure this out. Versus, this is never going to change. That's my aha that I think will help them figure out the next action we need to take.
Great. So what action do you want to do differently based on that?
Well, to be honest with you, I'm still not sure how we're going to figure this out. I know it can be figured out. I just need to figure out what I need to do to get him, I don't know yet what we're going to do, to be quite honest with you. I know
okay.
I got to.
But what's one shift you know you want to make?
My thoughts.
Yeah.
But then I don't know
how
that's going
to. You commit to paying attention to your thoughts and beginning to work on redirecting those thoughts.
And, yeah, that I want to do. And I guess I was hoping to figure out how we will restructure our morning, but maybe that's going to come in time.
Changing the thought. Well, what I would offer to you with him, with his age, is knowing what you know now. So going back to the model and asking, so step one of the model is to take aim. We want to take aim on not rushing.
Yes.
Step two is to collect information. What do we know? What's going on? Get him into that conversation. What is causing us to be rushing in the morning? Where are we running late? What is going on?
Yeah.
Collect information.
Right.
And then together start problem-solving options, knowing that the first one you come up with may or may not work. It's okay if it doesn't.
Okay, that's a great idea. Yeah,
right? Let's try something, and then you come back and you say, okay, what worked? What didn't work? What do we do differently?
Okay, that's
right.
Great.
But you expect that whatever you try the first time is not going to work the first time.
Okay.
And let him learn that that's how life is, especially a kid who's really struggling with his own perfectionism.
Uh-huh.
We're going to try something, and then we're going to check back in with each other at the end of the week and see and talk about what worked and what didn't work so we can keep tweaking it to make it better. Okay?
Okay, that's really good. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So you've got the skills and the information to take it from here. As you manage your mindset around it, the rest will unfold. Okay?
Okay, that sounds good.
Awesome. What about you, Liz?
So my focus was trying to get my son Dylan to keep his hands to himself. I guess my takeaway, again, I would probably reiterate what Michelle said, which was changing my expectations or my story a little bit.
Instead of, and
you helped me realize, I think, what my story was, which I wasn't entirely clear on. Thinking he's not going to fail out of life. He's going to, he's only 7 years old.
Right.
First of all, and, you know, be more realistic, but he's, and realize that he's having a hard time managing his impulses. So just like the, bringing that compassion piece in, I think a lot of times we just go like right to anger and that flight takes over, but bringing the compassion into it, I think for myself and for my husband is going to be key for us.
Yeah, for sure. Awesome. Yeah. And is there any action you want to commit to?
I want to have a conversation with him about what to do with his hands instead of putting them on somebody in that moment. Or even, I liked your idea, maybe have him bring in something like a toy or a fidget thing to play with instead.
Just coming from that place of compassion, of course it's hard for you to keep your hands free to yourself. So let's help you learn how instead of you should be doing this because it's hard for him.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
It is hard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, ladies, you guys are awesome. This is a fabulous call. Ooh, now I'm getting
thank
echo.
You so much.
Clearly it's time to go.
Thank you. Thank you.
Have a great holiday. There's one more Lifeline call next week, and then we'll be talking to y'all in January. So enjoy your holiday.
Right.
Just keep reading your Monday emails.
Keep reading your Monday emails.
Okay, great. Thanks so much. Happy holidays.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.